now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Trevor Wee. Trevor has been taught the lore of the original people in Australia. He has a lot of information to share, and just so I don't take up any of more of his time than necessary, I'd like to introduce to you Trevor Wee, our very special guest. Trevor, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James.
And for our listeners, be sure to go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com. And if you like what we do, believe in what we do, please sign up and become a member. And we'll have Trevor's contact information on our dedicated website and our YouTube channel. Trevor, for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell us a bit about your background and how you came into the process of learning about the lore of the original people in Australia?
Yeah, sure, James. Firstly, when you say someone's learnt the lore, no one ever learns all the lore. So we get certain things which are appropriate to our dreaming. That means that the elders that pass information to us know that we are the right person in terms of a lineage to carry that particular lore. And I'll be covering more about that as we go on. And then secondly, in terms of lineage, I'm not an original descent person. So my background is, father to me is Indonesian. He arrived here in Australia in Darwin in 1946 in the undercarriage of a DC-3, almost dead. And that was a period of the Keep Australia White policy. So he was an automatic illegal immigrant. And so as soon as he was out of hospital, he was to be deported back to Indonesia. So he's a young boy and in hospital there, a suspected orphan. And an original lady, Auntie Jane Christopherson, she adopted him black fella way. That's informal, as you would. You see someone that needs taken care of. You got to remember this is a love-based society. And she's a half-sister to Big Bill Nagy, the gentleman who started Kakadu National Park by bequeathing his or rolling over his the land that they got back under their land claim, early land claim there, and became stage one of Kakadu National Park. 3 years later, Dad was actually living with the administrator of the Northern Territory while the government was trying to work out what to do with him, because everyone in Darwin said, no way, you're not going to send him back. And they knew that basically, well, they thought that it would be best for him to be going into community with probably the same skin colour. That were their sentiments back then. However, original people were not people back then. They were part of the flora and fauna. Now, this administrator had to take a posting to Egypt, and a new administrator come in, so they sort of scrambled at the last minute there to work out how to get that into the community. And Auntie Bertha Cabillo, a Larrakia woman, she was married to an Englishman, so she didn't have this problem of being classified as part of the flora and fauna. She was able to sign a Westminster document, a formal document of adoption. So I belong to Gunwinku mob, which is Gumbalanya Owen Pally, through Auntie Jane Christopherson's actions there, and then to Larrakia mob, which is the Darwin Peninsula and surrounding area, the other side of Darwin Harbour there. So when it comes to certain aspects of law that I was given, that was 16 and 17 years of age, at an area which is now included as part of Kakadu National Park from a particular elder there. And basically, you know, as an older person now, I know that he would have just looked at me and knew that I was of the right energy profile to carry that particular lore. Now, original people are extremely psychic. That's something that I probably delve into a little as we continue through this knowledge transfer today. And that's another thing we these days we got, I'm very careful with the semantics the words are using, because in this current system there are a lot of words that entrap people into engaging in dysfunctional paradigms in terms of energy, because sound is everything and causes form. And this, so I don't use the words teaching, lecture, or education even. And I had to work out what would be the best way to describe what original people do, and I come up with this terminology, which I hope more people will embrace, and that is knowledge transfer. So the knowledge is presented to the young, and then it's up to them whether they're going to follow it or not. And also, there's, you know, there's this construct that you're free to be you. That's all under the edifice of the morals and ethics that are agreed to, if you like. Well, the ethics is a community thing, agreed to by the society that you live in. The moral base is the personal one. But at any rate, yeah.
In the process, you described how there was something about your morphic resonance, your energetic field, which the elders that you were connected to, they saw immediately. So I guess a decision was taken within these groupings that we should bring, you know, Trevor into the fold, so to speak. And, you know, bearing in mind what's permissible to discuss and what's not.
Yeah, gosh, a lot of things I can add to that. But firstly, when you're growing up as a kid, you're just hearing things in community. That's transfer of knowledge. And then secondly, with the that's not deep knowledge, and it's just you know, the basic stuff that is, it comes out of the deep knowledge, and it's the everyday things, the I guess their sayings or expressions. And, you know, one of the classics is, you know, if you're asking questions, you're not listening. Well, that goes all the way back to things like when somebody is told something when they're a child and it's not from their immediate experience, then that information goes into the knowledge base that actually is developing a belief system. And they are encouraging personal experience so that the knowledge that you acquire is a better type of knowledge, and you go back and readjust the belief system. So when they're saying you're not listening, they're talking about using all of your senses, and that's not just the five waking senses. There's actually about, I don't know, there's more than 20 physical senses, you know, sense of balance and all these other things as well, but everybody keeps referring to, you know, the principal five. So there's a whole range of what we refer to as intuitive senses, and they can be lower level intuition and higher level intuition. There's a whole scope of discussion there. But so when the follow your personal dreaming, you end up with knowing more about the self, your path, your position in a social group. Understanding of sovereignty in unity, within unity, is extremely important. And, you know, these days we see groups talking about sovereignty, and it's in context, you know, it's appropriate where, you know, cultures were smashed before and that type of thing. But it's not even with cultural groups, sometimes just with individual groups. And then other people talking about the unity side of it, and even, you know, misrepresenting that context in terms of things like New World Order and all the rest of it. The original people actually understood sovereignty within unity. You don't have a harmonic, unified social group unless every individual is happy within that group. And it's like the chicken and egg scenario. So how they got that together in the first place, but all their strategies and mechanisms that kept them surviving as long as they had, although there would have been evolution within all of these strategies and the like, they basically knew what life was about, and that was to be enjoyed and loved. So when it comes to particular law of a higher level. That was not me being taken to anywhere. These things just occurred serendipitously. I ended up being in a location, and one elder just looked at me and he told me something, and it was just me and him, and he shared a little bit with me there, and I found 40 years later I was doing exactly what he told me. So he explained some law to me, and by drawing that in the sand with symbols, and then he, within this process, he applied that as a verb, as in to do, and he said, "You go there." And then 40 years later, I was doing exactly what he said. Now, a year after that, the first session that I had with him, serendipitously, I was in another place, and this was way south of Darwin, and a woman I didn't even know, she just walked up to me as I was pumping petrol at Mataranka, heading south to do a bit of geology, and she just walked past me and said something, and my mate was with me, and I just said to him, "What did she say?" And he just laughed and said, you heard her. And then a year later, or just under a year later, I was in another place, which was just north of Alice Springs, working in a woodcutter's camp there. Another elder, whom I didn't know at all, just again a lady, and she walked up and told me this exactly the same thing as the first lady did a year before. And then 25 years later, I was doing what both of them said I would be doing. So when we're talking about this, I guess to use a word, this psychic, this knowing, you know, they got a really good hand. Like, you can walk in and into communities and, you know, with the really old mob, and they just look straight through you. They know where you come from, where you've been, and where you're gonna be going to. And it's quite an incredible thing. The weird thing with making that statement for me is that I sort of grew up, well, I did, I grew up thinking a lot of these things were the norm. And it wasn't until I really got into primary school and then high school, and gradually I was learning more and more that these things that I was experiencing were not the norm. Now, those examples of incidences I just gave them, they were at the end of high school and just after, but I left. So that was 16, 17 and 18. But, you know, even in the younger years, I realized there were a lot of things that were happening to me, and it seemed that other people weren't getting it. Now, as an older person, I now know that a lot of people were getting it, probably more than what it actually seemed. But I also learned that there's this oppressive situation where there's doctrine and dogma that is operating there, and people don't want to speak out loud because of the fear of being ostracized, ridiculed, and all the rest of it that goes with that. So it depends on what type of community you're in and whether you feel safe to speak out, because there's always that peer pressure thing that operates as part of psychology of human condition. That's also something that's been manipulated quite perversely by some of those groups that you have covered quite extensively in some of your talks, which I don't really want to talk about them in real words here, only just to reference that we acknowledge that they exist. But I don't like to talk about them because I don't want to empower them at all. And as I said before, the sound and everything. So it's okay if we're aware of these things that are going on this planet, but not to buy into it. And it's really this process of just observing. Now, for some folks, they're going to think, well, that's how do you do that, you know, without actually getting caught up in it? And, well, my life is an example of that. If you don't buy into it, so to speak, you'll find that all the love comes into your life, and the opposite of that is all the stress, frustration, the debt cycle, and the sort of failure at coping. Really, you know, this some people think that they're coping fine, but one quote I really like is probably forget the exact how it goes off the top of my head, but this Krishnamurti, when he refers to this no point in being well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. Well, there's no measure of well-being in that. So people may think that they're okay, but until something actually happens on their doorstep and they realize, well, hang on, there's a lot more than that's going on. So that's sort of the isolation factor. You know, if you don't get the real news and you don't really know what's going on and you're isolated in your own little realm and you go through your little, local hiccups or whatever. But with this business of not buying into things, there's one expression that I really like, and I share it with as many people as possible. And it's from the elders, translated into Pidgin. So it's in the English language, and this goes, it's all just business. Just watch that fella. The minute you chase that fella, you might get other business you didn't want. Now, when I was a lot older and I realized that all the gurus, sages, seers and yogis all around the planet basically saying the same thing. Yeah, but one other thing that I noticed, that there's a lot of stories that go on and on and on and on, and then eventually you get to this end point where they're just telling you, just observe. And they might be making that statement, you know, throughout their presentations and the like. But I love the Aboriginal way of it, because they're telling you, just observe, and then they're telling you the reasons why, all in one very short phrase.
You talk in I've watched some of the knowledge transfer presentations you've given, and you've talked about, and you alluded to a moment ago, about the power of sound, vocalizations, whatnot. And please, if it's okay, could you share with our listeners what seems to be happening when a ceremony is taking place, where singing and dancing is taking place? Because there is very much a sonic sound aspect, vibrational aspect to that, and then you tie it into the song lines and that kind of thing. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you'll see all theologies understand sound and what, how it causes things to come into form. And even beyond theologies, the so-called modern science got an understanding of that as well, or certain aspects, certain people. So I use the word information, and I just hyphenate it as information. So it's the data that causes things to come into form, and that data is frequency and or sound. So when original people are looking at our existence here in the third dimension, they already know that this is not the only place we exist. And that's another thing, you know, they got this awareness of the multi-dimensional reality. And now, of course, these when you're born, you got X amount of awareness, and as you get older, you know, you increase your awareness. But awareness is only the ability to sense data. And then mindfulness is the ability to decipher the data and then make decisions and know what to do about it. So when the singing the song lines is very, very broad. Well, there's so many things to be included in there. But essentially, they're lines of energy of what we these days we could refer to as the computer of Mother Earth. They wouldn't have had the word computer back then, but it's, you know, it's essentially the same thing. So what it is, there's a memory field. And the memory field is basically a resonance between two points. I'm just keep this, you know, very simple. So you see that when the first expression, and these days people say, well, you know, it's all continuous anyway. There was never one first or initial point. But that's that from the human condition. These are where our perceptions are coming from. So they're saying the first entity is there and it can't see itself, and it doesn't know if it exists. Or may not know that it exists, and but it realizes the potential that if it makes another one of itself, then it can see itself. So you see how we're using the dot. The dot represents everything, this potential, this conscious potential, and then the physical potential that come out of that. So this dot is drawn, and it's got a radiant field around it, and that's referred to as the polymonad. So that's a dot with a circle surrounding it, and it realizes that if it make another one of itself, it can see itself. So it's expressive energy. It expresses its intent out onto the margin of its radiant field and create another same size fella, and lets radiant field coming back through the center from where it was first expressed from. Now you'll see that that's also the two overlapping circles with the Pisces vesica of sacred geometry. And so the thing is that the second point there that is created is they refer to as receptive energy. So their use of their symbols here, they're saying the first one is masculine and the second one is feminine. And the overlap, which is created automatically, is the third vibration, and that's the child. Okay. Now, the thing is here, how they draw it when they say this, when the energy expresses itself, it saw the path that it made and then can go back. And that's what memory is. Okay. You know what came before. And then you can go back. And so now that's a resonance field, and that's what we describe these days as the memory field. Now, the memory field is there, and in the physical structure, it's contained. And in the conscious structure, we don't know how it is contained, but in the physical structure, we do. For example, silicon, which is used in the base of old aerial solid-state radios, and now this forms the silicon chip. And all the computers and everything else, the frequency go in there, and preserves it faithfully, doesn't distort it at all. And that's the whole thing. If you've got this resonance going on, anything you put in there is stored faithfully. And so we know everything is in there in the computer. And here's the other issue is that when you've got all this information sitting there, that's like a barcode, and your body is a scanner, and it's in reverse, to the supermarket and the scanner. Your body's a scanner, and if you're not living consciously and you walk over the top of this stuff, it can trip you to respond either as a reaction or an action. And I just use those words to define a positive response to a stimuli or a negative response to a stimuli. And so a lot of people don't even know what's going on, and they're getting tripped by what's in the memory field. And the whole area, like the Middle East, there's so much warring in there, and then you go into areas of peace where it takes one really minor catalyst for everything to get set off again. Now, we obviously know that there's a whole other agenda there going on for reasons of contest or competition to control energy sites there. Because one thing is, when we're singing a song, like whenever we say singing, and that's put, what that is expression of positive conscious intent. Now, if you express that, it'll go anywhere. You can go to a shop and buy a secondhand chair, and you can feel an imprint on it. Okay, so the stuff is stored in there. Now, but if you do this singing on top of songline, it's easier to put it into the memory field of the global structure, and the songlines come together in confluence in a place which we refer to as a vortex. And so you sing on top of them, and that's the easiest place. And so you see all temples and churches around the world, and predominantly all the significant ones are on top of vortexes. So the border rings here. Vortexes, and you see that some of these places are too hot, they cook you. There's all sorts of frequencies in the natural condition that are disharmonic for the bioelectromagnetic condition of humans, and Aboriginal mob don't sit on them. So if you've got a border ring that's really hot and it's used for certain ceremony, certain people of a level of learning go in, know what to do, and they extract themselves fairly quickly. Places where they might even sort of be medium type hot, and there's certain ceremonies that the younger people can watch, but they never go in. They're about 30 meters away, observing from about 30 meters away, because these places, if you stay in them too long, you get cooked. And it's the same as you see modern technologies played around with things like microwaves, radio waves, X-rays, high voltage power lines, this type of thing. And their frequency is disharmonic with our bioelectromagnetic condition. And these exist in the Earth due to things like plate compression, stagnant underground water, compressed underground water, vortexes that spin at certain frequencies, just for example. And so we don't sit on top of those places. When we have a look at the sedentary societies today, and they've come along and they've put houses on top of places, and it's exactly the wrong place to be. I've been quite a few places up the eastern seaboard here, and I said to elders, what do they build there for? And they said, well, our elders told them not to, but they don't listen. You know, so we get a lot of people that are, you know, not coping simply because of where they're living. One of the things I do with the presentations, I do a workshop day, which usually goes for about 3.5-4 hours, and people tap into it really, really quickly about how to sense these different things. And I've had a number of people come to me after and ask, can I go in and look at their property? Now, I only ever get asked if there's a problem. So my first thing is, don't tell me what the problem is. I'll come and have a look. I don't want to be cold reading or anything like that. And I walk in there and I just feel all the stuff and tell them even, you know, things that are going on in their personal lives that I should know nothing about because I've never even met them before. So at any rate, people invariably feel that there's something amiss. Otherwise, they wouldn't ask you to come along there anyway. And the thing is that, you know, they, by the time they've listened to what's being presented in the natural law stuff and then also the intuitive sensing workshops, and they realize, yeah, it is the wrong place to be sitting in. So then it's up to them to, you know, make up their mind what they want to do about it. I mean, one woman asked me, you know, what should I do about it? And I said, look, man, I'm not a counselor. I can tell you what you're working with, but it's up to you to work out, because that's a decision. She's free to be her, and that's the way it should be, because that's how it also is in the original people's authority. If they say in a traditional sense, if you know, kids aren't scolded at all, they're allowed to explore. If they're doing something dangerous, you know, they're pulled up, that's appropriate. But once they go through puberty and initiation and they learn the laws, and if they break the laws, there's harsh punishments. But outside of that, those things that are there for the right reasons, for, you know, for the social harmonics and the interpersonal harmonics and just the personal harmonics, the individual is allowed to be as creative as they want to be. And so basically that creativity is all about love and expressing love in all the form, creative form. There's a lot of meditative practices in culture. Tool fabrications, very meditative. The paintings, meditative. The weavings, meditative. Even looking for the food, finding the food, you know, their meditative processes, just being in tune with nature. And when we're dialoguing, not just with humans, we're dialoguing with the whole of nature. You know, the rocks have got personality, the sky, the water, and all the creatures. There's a whole lot of stuff in there. Like, I've had some people here that have been doing some of the following some of the presentations and workshops here in Sydney, and one fellow been back about 11 or 12 times, and he said he just can't hear it enough because every time he comes, there's something else that he finds out about. But he's one of these individuals now that, you know, in a very short period of time, he walk around and he just sees everything in a totally new light, you know, including animals that will appear and tell you something if you know how to decipher what's happening there within the information. The information is not limited to just to the physical coming into form. It's also, you know, stuff which is passed on by interaction between different physical entities, be they inanimate or animate, using, you know, modern terminologies there. So it's really about a positive conscious intent and to be putting that out all the time. Because you see, when he went and he made this path, and he saw the path that he made, and then he can go back. And in in Pidgin, when I was growing up as a kid, we knew that as comeback. And most of your listeners probably know that it's the same word from another culture, which is referred to as karma. So it's basically explaining the reciprocating nature of universal energy. So on the singing the song lines, when we say we look at the rock, we look away, we look back, and the rock's still there. Why? Because I can remember what it is. Okay, so it's got there's a resonance that causes rock to be rock, and it has its, you know, level of consciousness. But we also realize that if the rock disappears, then so do we. So one of the main things we're singing into the song lines is, sure, people hear the stories and all the rest of it, but the main thing behind all that is continuance. It's the silicon bridging the two circles together, then it becomes the infinity symbol, you know, used in other cultures. And I can actually, I found one here in Sydney as well, carved as two touching circles. So that's the essence of singing all that is the love, that vibration that causes the human being, and then you know, all of the material stuff that we are a part of as human beings. So when we're outside of this dimension, we're outside of it, but original people can go outside of it, and that's another thing that for some people at a certain level, I've taken them to certain areas and revealed certain things to them. And mind you, these are things that I'm not going to talk about in too much detail. I'll tell you the reason why is that you probably have heard the word secret.
Mm-hmm.
Men's business, secret women's business. There's nothing really secret about it. It's what it is. It's respect. Okay. So this is I just put it to you this way. It's a matter of semantics here. A Balanda, a white fella, comes along in the early days and he's talking to a Binning, black fella, and he's asking him a question, and then he end up talking about something to do with women, perhaps, and the black fella clams up, and the white fella says, "Oh, well, you can't talk about that." And he says, "Why is it secret?" And he nods his head. And that's just a word. Had the white fella said, "Why?" Because it's disrespectful, the Aboriginal mob would have nodded their head. Okay, so it's not secret in terms of secret societies, rigid pyramid hierarchies which are blocked and cause disease. Okay, it's what it is respect. So you don't get knowledge passed on to you until the elders know that you are fully responsible and respectful of the level of knowledge you already got, because they know that knowledge can be used or abused. So for this reason, there's quite a few elements, not just in this country, in other places, where people get wrong idea, get carried away, and they try to go and do things thinking that it's all magical and it's going to empower them and whatever. That's, you know, we just don't want to be attracting people to wrong places by giving away too much information at this stage. So, and put it this way, when we're meeting people face to face, we can read the aura and we know who we can transfer what level of knowledge to. And you know, for that's very important as a custodian of knowledge, to be only telling it to the right level. So of course I can work in early childcare and pass on that level, and I can work with teenagers and pass on that level, and that's within the realm of knowledge that I'm a keeper of. Or you know, and you get right up into high levels of stuff, and there's stuff that I don't know about and I don't even want to know about because it's not my role. I follow a personal beaming to me, which is Goenna. That's a conscious energy. And my complementary dreamings are Azure Kingfisher. That's the courage to communicate. And then the green ant, that's sovereignty with unity. And then the hermit crab, which is the ability to cope with changes. So I follow my natural affinities by following my dreamings, and I end up in this life path that I'm on now, which is, you know, to do with appropriate knowledge transfer at a time. Don't really yet like to use the word time, but at a waypoint, if you like. Everything in culture is to do with place. Time is you know, it's an artificial thing, but it's a place. Place is important. So a place, I'll just use the word waypoint. So we're at this waypoint now where people are either going to work out what's going on the planet or not. And at the end of the day, personally, I don't worry too much, can't afford to, because what happens is this: when you're not here, it doesn't matter. Okay, it's only when you're here in this dimension that the ego is heavily invested, and it's all, you know, the biggest thing for humans to cope with is a sense of loss. And original people's societies had a lot of mechanisms there for coping with all that. And the biggest sense of loss they're ever going to get is when the loss of a loved one, when they pass. And the reason for that is because everything else is nothing to do with the ownership or acquisition. Because we don't own anything. We don't even have the personal possessive pronoun, my, because we don't own anything. We belong with. And when everything's shared properly like that, you don't have that sense of loss when it comes to material things. There's a sense of respect when you have resources, and they're to be shared appropriately between everybody within that particular group that's meeting, or you save some for somebody else later when you're going to meet up with them. I've got a classic story of that. This is back in the 70s, young girl at Matarenka, and European lady had given her an apple, and after about 15 minutes or so, the lady said, "Oh, doesn't she like that apple? She's not eating it." I looked at the little girl, and she was holding it down to her side. I said, "Oh, no, no, she like it, but she's going to save that until she's with her siblings, and then that will be broken up and shared equally with everybody, and everyone can see what was there, and everybody shares equally." Yeah, anyway, I probably got a little bit off the track. You have to keep me.
No, it makes perfect sense.
But I think it was like singing the song lines, and I try. You know, we sing the song lines. There's the reasons for us to do with continuous. There's a whole scope of stuff in there to do with the law and law. So law, L-O-R-E. They're the stories that will change all around the planet, because different people got different symbols that they use, and different colloquial expressions and different ways of gelling or feeling affinity with certain things. With inside the L-O-R-E, you look for the L-A-W. And the L-A-W is based on natural law. And the very important thing to understand is natural law does not change, and nor can it be hijacked by ego. So all the governments, religions, and corporations we've got these days, they operating with egoic law. They can change them whenever they want to. And it's rubbish stuff, you know. For us, it's totally rubbish stuff. But anyway, we won't go too far down that line, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners understand what's going on there.
There's a lot of discussion from a non-original person perspective, and you made a point about how certain terms are subjective, or, you know, certain terms are loaded with meaning coming from a different culture perspective. We hear so much about the dreaming, the dream time. Can you tell our listeners from your perspective and from your background what the dreaming is in a larger sense, and what does like personal dreaming mean?
Okay, the way I explain it, other original elders might say, "Oh, that's not a very good explanation." It doesn't really matter, because, you know, under the context of L-O-R-E, where it changes wherever you go, that's basically, you know, I put it in a way that make enough sense to people. When I'm talking to like teenage groups and explaining it, is probably a really good level to start at. And that's with that business about energy going backwards and forwards, the resonant field. And so when that first entity was there and it couldn't see itself, and then wondered if it exists, if it itself exists, and then realized the potential, if it make another one of itself, then it could see itself. Now, that potential was sitting there, but what was embedded in that potential? Was there a need to do that? Well, if you're there by yourself and there is nothing else, or you're all the one thing, whatever, whichever way you look at it, is there a need to do it? No, there was a desire to do it. And there's a difference between needs and wants. Okay, so I had a desire to do this. This is a law, L-O-R-E, okay? I'm just putting it into English words. So I had the desire to do it. So it, when it did that, you see, we use the word dream in the English context. It had the dream to do it because dream, see, it covers things like aspiration.
Mm.
Okay? So the word dream itself got a lot of different meanings, but, you know, it's like aspiration, but also it also cover, it's a conscious thing because we're immersed in fields of energy. And the two forms of energy, it's a conscious energy and a physical energy that come out of the conscious energy. So that dream, where we live in the dream. Okay, so when it created another one of itself and got the resonance field, it then created the physical realm. And that is the dream. The physical realm is the dream. We live in the dream. When we pass from here, we go back to reality.
So from an original person perspective, this dream is, well, obviously it's from a temporal Western time sense, a temporary thing. Home, if you will, would be regarded as the what some traditions refer to as the afterlife, I guess a more expansive expression of oneself in perhaps a different environment. Is that how it works? Or
yeah, sort of interesting word there, because it also in time implies time, you know, it says after.
Yes
is after life.
And that's one of the problems of the whole that thought is just we're so limited. Yeah. From our culture perspective, by the words that we're taught, you know. So
when we're here in this dimension being as humans, then we and all the phenomena that goes with that. But as it's not really before and after, it's all happening simultaneously. Very, very difficult to explain all that stuff without sort of pictures and whatever. However, one fella asked me one day, what did I make of past life experiences? And I said, oh gosh, mate, I've got no idea. But anyway, I'm just going to use this little story because the actual metaphor that I came up with on the spot, I thought, oh, well, that's actually a good metaphor. It can be used to quasi explain quite a few things. And I said to him, well, it's like this, you know, you have an anemone and it has all these tentacles and then it's got a base. And so when you born as an incarnation here, you come from some realm, which I'm just going to refer to it as the ethereal realm. And then the you are the tip of the anemone. You see, the tip of an anemone's tentacle is a sensory tip. So you sense everything through there. But you have this conduit which goes down into the base. And inside there, you could say, liken that to, say, like collective consciousness. And there's neither past, present, or future. It's just all that is and will ever be, so to speak. And so if you got the right radio tune, frequency tuned in, you can go down in there and get stuff. And then when you have a sensory tip here and another sensory tip, all these waving around tentacles and the sensory tips, and then there's also energy going between these. So this space or the water is really is like the physical realm, and you're getting all this information and, you know, phenomena that you're experiencing there, but the conscious realm is back down into here. So the thing is that the reason why I thought this was such a good metaphor was because there's a couple of things I'm going to mention here. You have a look at the word up. You know, in the English language, you can lock up, look up, phone up, ring up, cook up, mess up, stuff up, lock up, you know, and why? Why? There's no other language. I talked to some people about this, and they said over in Scandinavia somewhere, I forgot the country, they said they got the same thing. And then the one academic said, oh, yeah, no, but actually they got that from the English language. It eventually, you know, pervaded into their system, and so they adopted that. But that English language was what, you know, that's the most powerful form of magic on the planet, because it was given power for certain reasons. And everyone's following it. So what is everybody doing? They're looking up when they should be looking within. Okay. So with that anemone, it actually encouraged when I thought about that. That metaphor is a good thing because it gets you to look back within. It's all within. You know?
Yes, because the concept of up in itself implies like a hierarchical mode of thinking, like the heavens, the celestial spheres and levels of.
Yeah, which are there as symbol, but if you're not careful with subliminally how those things can be hijacked, if you like, to manipulate people, well, you see the rigid pyramid. It's okay if you're using it as a system for physical energy, but once you start employing that as a psychological system, it's blocked. It's rigid. It causes dis-ease. You know, original system. We understand the power of the trilogy without a doubt. I've shared this with some people that come to my workshops when at the right level, but it's not drawn as a triangle sitting on its base. Within certain artworks, it may appear to be a triangle on its base, but that's because it's appearing as an element within an artwork, and that's the way it's coming across there. But when we got that as a free-floating form, it's drawn on a side, like it's pointing in like an arrowhead, and there's a dot in the middle. And you spin that because everything in the universe is spinning. And when you do your meditation by spinning this triangle, that's when you know you're free to be you. And so their social system, there's no hierarchy in terms of a rigid pyramid hierarchy. So when the Europeans came and they found one fella and they're going, well, who's your king? Oh, sorry, they discover one tribe. They say, who's your king? And they say, well, what do they want to talk to one person for? And the Europeans insist, no, who's your king? And they can work it out because in the Aboriginal culture, all the elders that are off a certain level, they all work together. You know, no one's really got a power of veto except if they're the person that you go to for that particular thread that's being discussed or whatever, or the thing that's important, the important issue at a time. And but they all work together. So invariably, they work out. Oh, we should be pushing forward somebody. And because they want to talk to one person. So the person that gets pushed forward is the diplomat. It's logical. Then they put a brass plaque on him and say, you know, King Billy, and we look at that photo, 200 years later or whatever. But they're not a pyramid hierarchy like this. Everybody's like equal, and everyone got equal opportunity to learn. And if you want to learn, you can. There's maybe three principal things that will stop you, perhaps lack of inclination, perhaps a mental impairment, and the biggest thing is that goes for everybody is that if you don't show the respect and responsibility for level of information that you're at, you don't get the next level. But every individual got the capacity, if they're able to, live in an extended life cycle, they get up to quite high levels of learning. And the psychic abilities are really well developed when they're really young as well. Little kids, you see their aura. And in Aboriginal cultures, the awareness keeps going like this. And in modern culture, it's there and already between 3.5, 4, 5, and it comes in. And then you just get this tunnel vision thing,
In the time we got left, Trevor, and, within the context of what is respectful to discuss from your own background and from the people that you've grew up with. Another thing that people would like to know about, but I've always been interested in knowing more about, is the concept of animal totems and one's connection to it. And we hear about this from other cultures, Native American cultures and other cultures, particular tribes and whatnot. But for example, in Australia, one may have an animal totem that's, in our example, like a kookaburra. Another person may have a gowanus. Is it something, and again, within the context of what's, it can be respectfully discussed or not, how would one describe that to someone from, like, another culture of what it means to have an animal totem?
All right. Well, firstly, I'm of a position that I don't totally agree with the word totem in certain contexts.
Yeah.
And again, it's a matter of semantics. It's a borrowed borrowed word from other cultures imposed. There's a lot of distortions in Aboriginal culture, things that are imposed on them. And then a lot of Aboriginal people learn that stuff from the Europeans and they follow it because that's the language. But, you know, it's only, it's semantics, but totem can be more appropriately applied if it's a group symbol. And then when it's a personal symbol, it's your dreaming. That's your personal dreaming. So, but some people, a lot of original people today, they say, well, that's my totem. But that's just a word that they learn. But I'm just covering that from a more semantic point of view. Now, your personal dreaming, that's going to, what that's all about is designed to get you to go within and identify the issues or challenges that you need to face in order to be able to maximize your sense of well-being, and in so doing, maximizing your contribution to goodwill. Okay, so what basically when you're born, or even sometimes before birth, and maybe sometimes after birth, if there's no mature woman around who's got all the data in her head. And you might meet her 6 months later, you know, because mob are out in the bush and they come back together for ceremony time, and then they might apply a personal dreaming then, or the particular parents or mother at the time may have enough knowledge and put a temporary idea on it and then confirm later with one of the elder women, and they say, yeah, that's dreaming for that person and for that child. And then basically you and this can vary around the country as well, and it's all pretty, I'll just sort of give you a line of best fit here. You basically learn that story. That's the story of the things that are going to allow you to cope. And remember that everything that's incarnate, all you got to do is learn how to cope. It doesn't matter whether you're human, you know, animal, plant, you know, it's all about learning how to cope. And so if you're not coping, what is there? There's nothing, okay? So coping is about harmonics. And that's the thing there. The whole system is based on harmonics. And so the things that you learn from those stories, or you extrapolate the stories into the human condition, and they'll identify what things that you got to master, if you like, to be really know who you are in terms of your life path. And then through this process, you're going to end up with a principal vocation that you're going to be good at. And when you're good at something, really good at something, you're well respected for it. And no one cares about what you're not good at. It's a total, there's no tall poppy, there's no bullying, there's no narcissism. They've got strategies and mechanisms in their own social psychology system. If these things seem to be coming out, then they, you know, they curtail it pretty quickly in the right way. Now, if you, for example, have a go at art when you're young and you're no good at art, and they just giggle and laugh, oh, you're a rubbish artist, it's not taken personally. And but you, that people work out what you are good at, and that's what you'll be well respected for. So at the end of the day, you're able to contribute positively to the community group. Once you are a healthy individual with your balanced id, inside, I'm just going to use Freudian, I think it was Freud, the concept there of the id and whatever, the balance. Now, they understood all that stuff. In fact, when I had a look more, this is really only in the last 6 or 7 years when I started looking more at these other concepts from other cultures, and I looked at this word subconscious. And it's the real implication there is sub, and it cannot be seen easily. Okay, and when I had a closer look at the original people's system, they actually understood that there, and they are understanding this as soon as they've gone through initiation, and they're working with it the whole time. So instead, I renamed it for them, and I've referred to it as the sun conscious, because that is the light within, and it's always been there. You don't have to look up or outside for it. So when you got your personal dreaming, that's where you're going. You're going inside, and you know who you are, what you are in terms of a symbol. You know, because when you're existing here now, you're a symbol. You might take several years before you really get it, and you're refining it through your whole life. You know, you never stop refining those sorts of things. But you know, fairly early on, they're getting a really good picture of, you know, the nature of existence, which you know, keeps them in a heart-based state. So the personal dreaming aspect, I guess, you can refer that to what other cultures come up with, what they refer to as astrology, because it's very, very similar. And so thing is, these days a lot of people turn up and say, "Oh, what's my dreaming so, well, you know, if I get to know you for 2 weeks, I might be able to work it out, but just go and ask the old woman." Because we get people come up all the time wanting to be immersed in culture, and you know, Aboriginal people got their own lives. They you know, unless they actually, you know, got a business or whatever, and they're taking people out in the bush, a lot of people aren't going to get that. And that's why we're sharing a lot of this stuff. There's certain people think, well, we shouldn't be saying certain things. Well, we don't say what is inappropriate to say. You know, it's at an appropriate level for people. And a basic thing is to keep in mind, there's be in the heart, stay in the heart. And if everything's done for the right intent, then there's no problem with it. Because there's quite a few elders I come in contact with, they said, well, look, you know, they stopped telling European mob stuff when they were getting slaughtered. And they said, well, there's no respect, so we just tell them the children's level or public level story. So you can travel around here and go to all the national parks or down the seaboard or whatever and see the interpretive boards, and it's pretty much children's level story. You go into higher, you know, adult level stories, you're going to get a lot more information, or it makes more sense to people. Like, and people walk past and think, oh, it's a lovely, lovely Aboriginal story. And even the basic symbols, if they don't understand them, they don't know what the story is telling them. Some people might get a feel for it, you know, like an empathy or feeling and understand a little bit. But a lot of them, you know, people say, oh, it's just a story, that they won't know at all what it's trying to tell them. So these days, one of the things I'm doing is taking the language of science, really, to help to explain, because the current so-called modernized system is using that language, and that's the language of the diacritic thought form, and the diacritic focuses on polar opposites. Now, that's good for flight or fight. It has its place, but it shouldn't be the overlord. And that's the problem on this planet. They've taken the syncretic system is the heart-based system, and that is the principal one, and the diacritic system, the logical processor, is a support system. But they've taken that diacritic process and focused on polar opposites, and when you get this, you get separation, because that's what it does. It compartmentalizes things and separates. And then you're going to get us and them. And then out of that, you're going to get competition. And even yesterday, I heard this guy talking on his phone telling someone, oh, yeah, no, the competition's good. And I'm thinking, gosh, if only he knew what he was talking about. Competition means that you can take without asking. And there's no respect in that. Okay? When you join a team and you engage in a team sport, you don't stop and ask the goalie, is that okay if I get that goal? Okay? It's an unspoken agreement that when you play this game, that you're engaging in taking without asking. But everybody agrees that's what you're going to do. That's why it's called friendly competition. So the native, or the nature-based native cultures, predominantly, the original peoples here, principally, and other cultures, Native Americans and throughout Asia and the like, you get snippets of all this stuff emerging within their cultures there, where they're syncretic thinkers. And, you know, basically that identifies that you're just a part of a whole. When you identify that, you know, the rock, the sky, the water, and all the creatures come together to make the whole, and so do you. Well, together you are whole. And then you get a clear understanding, whatever you do to any of that, you're invariably doing to yourself. You know, you don't get a greater sense of respect and appreciation than that model. And this referred to as co-petitive. So petition means to ask, co means together, together you ask. And that's what, and the permission, you know, see, it's asking and permission. And you've interviewed some other folks there talking about, you know, darker stuff and how the permission, don't give them permission. They've gotten around that, you know, with the secrets in plain sight and everything else. But if you don't give them permission, they're stuffed. And that's what it all the theologies are all telling you. It's the same thing, you know, be in the heart, stay in the heart. They've all got their different symbols, their different stories and whatnot. But a lot of them are still going to look up. And even a lot of the new age stuff that I look at now, and they're following certain names. As soon as you name something, you've got an ego brand on it. In original culture, it's the storyteller becomes the story. The name is incidental. And you'll see parallels to that in other cultures as well. But in a lot of places I've seen this, I'm just going to say new age spin. Anything that's really integral, relevant, inspirational in there is not new at all. It's old. It's always been here. But there's a lot of stuff that which they've just taken, you know, really fancy words and whatever, and just putting, you know, the same spin in a different way. So people are still chasing their tails.
Yes, it's still very much hierarchical. It's still very much, you know, it has its own biases and tolerances and judgmentalism, just like the Orthodox religions, which they claim to abhor. Well, we've reached the end of a very fascinating first hour, Trevor. Trevor's website is under construction, and we'll provide Trevor's contact information on our website and on our dedicated YouTube channel. And of course, when Trevor's website is up and running later down the track, we'll provide a link on our website to his website. For those of you listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.
Because this is a frequency war.